Well, I'll go back again now to 1922. It had been a hard winter for us, no paychecks, and some checks sent back NSF from one employer, so we rented a large house in Vancouver, went to Vancouver and put up a sign to rent. Our first tenant was a little old woman whose husband had died in England. He was a former deckhand on the lightship of the Goodwin Sands. She had a son who had been the batman for Lord Tweedsmore in 1914-19 in war, but he was living in Washington, USA. The second tenants were a mother and son, a middle-class English, who had come down in the social scale and could not seem to fit in anywhere. The war must have upset their way of living. They'd come to Canada, but they soon left and went to Australia. The next man and wife came from Alberta. He'd came to Vancouver to work on the longshore, and they were having a dispute with the Shipping Federation. He soon left, and they beat us out of $5. Another room was rented to a married woman whose husband was a telephone lineman up the coast. Another room we rented to a returned soldier whose face was terribly scarred from a bayonet wound received from a German soldier in France. He was hurt mentally. Wherever he went, people turned away from me in horror. Except two children we were taking care of everywhere where this poor man went to get employment, it was always no. He stayed with us till we sold the room and house business. He wanted to come and live with us in Burnaby. Edward bought a house on Parker Street and took the two children with us. He got tired of the city and its people and went over to North Vancouver and built himself a shack and lived there for 20 years. People came and went in this room and house. Every one of them had a secret of some sort or other. They would either tell us their secret or it would unfold between their coming and going. Then one morning, the old man that we'd rented a place at Lockdale to came in to tell us that the place had got burned down. So we went out to have a look at it. Yes, it had burned down all right. There was nothing left of it. And we had no insurance on the place as we couldn't afford to pay any. So we looked at the ruins and the ashes, and a neighbor came over and told us what had happened. He said as soon as it caught fire, Bob Green, a young returned soldier, ran a mile off the phone to the fire brigade, which was in North Burnaby, down the hill near the waterfront on Carlton Avenue. Then Bob ran up the hill to meet the fire engine. He saw it coming down. It was panting along at about 20 miles an hour. He took a flying leap onto the fire engine and told the driver to move over, and he would show him how to go to a fire. The driver moved over, and more from surprise and force, and down they went with the fire engine snapping and banging like a bag of walnuts. When they arrived at the fire, which by this time was all smoke and ashes, and no fire hydrant within 2 miles. So what? The following is a story written by Eloy Street in the Indian Time magazine in March 1956. No, it's a mistake. It's 1954. The story of the Burnaby Giants of long ago. They were prehistoric residents of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, which stood 15 feet high and wielded a stone axe weighing 1,600 pounds. Was he Indian or some race unknown? This is the question. Bill Norman and his son Ted are asking as their finds of ancient tools and carvings increase. The Norman farm at the north end of Deer Lake, Burnaby, a site adjacent to Burnaby, city proper, was from a time to time immemorial a native holy ground for Indians, and the secret council meetings were held under an immense old cedar tree, which is still standing. That is 1956. Fallen is the huge spruce tree, an Indian lookout post, reached by means of a cedar rope ladder, and now an 8-foot stump, reached in diameter. 50 acres of swamp and forest guard the old waterways. These well-hidden travel routes have circled the province. Deer Lake was a place of medicine, a mecca for the Salish tribes. Medicine men knew the unseen forces. They studied nature, could call on the unseen forces and the laws and the habits and nature and the ways of the animals, birds, and fishes. When the Indians were forced off the sacred lands of Deer Lake by the encroaching white men, the local shaman, a man of great power and forcefulness, laid a curse on the settlers. He said, "This land is a paradise round this lake, and if you move us off of this land, the people will come here, will work all their lives for nothing. I speak a curse against this land. After this, nobody will gain anything out of it." In any place of this sort, artifacts are accumulated. The Normans are interested in the Indians anyway. They remember the colorful old west of South Alberta, where the Bloods and Piegans came into town on treaty days. They recall how the Indian women loved the white babies and would pick them up out of their carriages and exclaim over them, and scaring their mothers after death. The Normans are interesting people themselves. They have planted themselves on a spot as colorful as the flatlands they left in Alberta. They found over 3,000 specimens ranging from axids to the smallest carved figures of birds, animals, or humans, often with the head turned away from the body. The large pieces could fit nothing but a giant hand. Whether they are tools or weapons, and the small pieces frequently shown three or more figures on one stone, the Normans are quite convinced that Stone Age giants lived here perhaps long before the mighty Fraser River split into two tributaries, one finding its way through the extensive swamplands into Falls Creek, another from the point where the bus depot in New Westminster is now, through Trout Lake, Burnaby Lake, and Deer Lake into Burrard Inlet, making three islands. The stone used in the carving is a very fine-grained and hard cut, with precise deep lines almost as with diamond-pointed tools. The figures still show traces of red, green, and black paint. Evidence seemed to indicate that the carver studied the stone for some time for some suggested design, inherent in the natural contours and the markings, and then proceeded to bring it out and add to it. There are frogs, monkeys, alligators, snakes, and elephants, head, a cat, and cranes, and various other animals, particularly the rabbit, many human heads cut with only one eye. There is a small figure similar to the East Indian fertility god of good luck. One rounded cube about 4 inches high and a figure projected each quarter radius. There are numerous hand tools such as adzes and arrowheads and trinkets, which the Normans hope to house eventually in a museum. It is not a rich district. To return to our medicine man, the greatest proof that his cursed tills operates is the fact that this is the location of the provincial prison farm, Ocala Prison. Year by year, thousands of prisoners work out their sentences at our labor. That's all.